It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.
Onward, Christian soldiers. This is the Leading LDS Podcast, and I'm Kurt Frankum. I will be your host today, and probably the next day, and the next week, and for a little while. And I hope that's okay, because I enjoy doing this. Today, we have another segment of the Leading LDS Podcast, with a segment on the Leading LDS Podcast that is called How I Lead. And this is where we reach out to the far-off leaders that, in whatever calling they're in, counselor, secretary, Relief Society president, whatever it is, and we say, how is it that you lead? And some incredible conversations come out of that discussion. And in this episode, we're going to go north, and I mean way north, almost out of this country, to Alaska, in Kodiak, Alaska, where I talk with Jethro Jones, and he is a member of his bishopric on the Kodiak Island. And we later find out there's only one ward on that island, and he's also served as an elders quorum president and a Sunday school president. So he's got some great experience. He's also, by day, he is a principal, a school principal for a middle school. And so obviously a lot of parallels can be drawn between his responsibilities there and in the church. And he's got a lot of great leadership guidelines and principles that he lives by. We talk about communication, how to ask questions, and really how to have an effective dialogue between leaders in order to avoid drama and make sure everybody's on the same page and really excel as a leader. So here is my interview with Jethro Jones of Kodiak, Alaska. All right, I'm here with Jethro Jones from Kodiak, Alaska. How are you, Jethro?
I am doing great. Thanks so much for the opportunity to be on your podcast today.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you have like a superhero name, Jethro Jones. Has anybody ever told you that?
Yeah, actually, I do get that a lot. People usually call me Jeffrey the first time, then I correct them, and then they say, oh, Jethro, really? I thought you were just kidding, or I thought I misunderstood, but that's really your name? Yes, that is really my name.
Yeah, like that's a, you should go on a comic book or something. So very cool. And you live in the mysterious state of Alaska. How on earth did you end up there?
It's actually a funny story. And also a very spiritual story, so we can just jump right in.
Yeah, let's hear it.
So my wife and I were, I'm a principal by profession, and I was an assistant principal down in Keynes District in Utah. And my wife and I were thinking about the next school year, because as an educator, you always think about the next school year. And so I was thinking about the next school year, and every time I thought about it, I could not picture myself at the school that I was at. And it was like a stupor of thought, and I couldn't see me anywhere in that school. And I knew that I needed to move, and I knew that the Lord wanted me someplace else. So I was applying for jobs and wasn't having much success. And so on May 5th, I was, in my basement, my wife was doing scrapbooking and I was looking at jobs, and I said, wouldn't that be funny if we went to Alaska? And she was like, haha. And then she went up and went to bed. Well, I went ahead and applied, and thinking there's no way I'm going to get this. And, then nothing happened for a while. And then a month later on June 5th, I got a phone call that said, are you still looking for a principal job? And I said, yes, I am. And so a couple of days later, we interviewed. A week and a half later, I was up in Kodiak, checking things out, looking around. And then a month after that, we had packed up our whole house and were driving up here. And
Long drive, huh?
Yeah, 2 full weeks. And it was 4,000 miles total that we went. and we have four little kids, so it was pretty adventurous. But what was amazing was that I knew we weren't supposed to be where we were, and I had no idea where we were supposed to go, and Alaska was never on my radar. But coming up here, the growth that I've had and the things that I've learned has just been amazing. And I know that the Lord wanted me up here for some reason. And I believe that it was to work with the kids in my school, but also to serve the members of the ward and the other people here on the island.
Wow. Very cool. So, and what city did you live in Utah before you moved up there?
We lived in Sandy.
Oh, okay. So, and did you grow up in Salt Lake County area, or where'd you grow up?
No, I was born there. And then I think first grade, I moved down to Southern California, and I lived in California until my junior year of high school. And then I moved up to Spokane, Washington, and graduated from high school there. So I actually went to five different elementary schools and three different high schools and only 1 year of middle school. So I moved around a ton and learned a lot from doing that also. But I think that's what inspired me to get into education, to be able to provide a good educational experience for any of the kids that come into my school.
Yeah, for sure. Now we're recording this at the end of August. So is your school year started up, or?
On Monday we have new teacher in service, and then school starts August 31st. So we are getting ready and gearing up, and it's nice to take a break from the intensity of getting ready for school and just slow down and think about some spiritual stuff. So I'm excited for this opportunity.
Cool. And it's an elementary school that you're at?
It's actually a middle school.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, and I love that. I think being a principal, there's a lot of parallels that go into leadership in the church, you know, very administrative, but at the same time, administrative, you know, as you're trying to build relationships with youth and impact their life in a positive way. So I'm interested to hear things you've learned there. But, and you're also a fellow podcaster, is that right?
That is correct. Yes.
Tell us about your couple podcasts you got.
Yep. So the first one is a education focused one. It's called Transformative Principal. And on that one, I interview other principals who are doing amazing things and try to share how to be the best principal you can be with others. And then the second one is Learned in Primary. And that one, my friend Tom and I, we co-host that, and we read a popular book or a book that is not about gospel principles. And we apply the gospel principles that we know and that we learned when we were kids to that book. So we just finished reading one called Influencer, which is about
You're speaking to my heart. That's like one of my favorites. That's great.
Yeah. So we talk about how the principles that are in that book are actually principles of the gospel. And we learn all that stuff in church. So it's not like we have to go outside the church to find things, but we can go outside the church and find things that definitely align and correlate with what we learn in church. So it's pretty fun. That's learnedinprimary.com.
Cool. Yeah. And that's and obviously, like you mentioned, that is kind of an LDS focused podcast, right? I mean, you're speaking LDS principles and so forth.
Yep. Absolutely. Cool.
Great. And man, I can't wait to check out the Influencer episode. I've written various articles on leading LDS relating Influencer to how it can be applied to home teaching and visiting teaching. So really powerful concepts. I love that book. So
good. Cool. I'm excited to hear your feedback too then, because we just barely scratched the surface. So
oh yeah. Yeah, I've read the book multiple times and applied it in multiple callings and great book. So, that's great. And I'm now, as far as your church service up there, you're currently serving in the bishopric. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct. I'm a counselor in the bishopric.
How long has that happened? Been going on?
Yep, just a couple months after I got here, the stake president called me in, and when he was visiting the island and extended the calling. So that was just about the whole time I've been here.
Visiting the island, it's like you're in the South Pacific or something, but you are actually, Kodiak is on an island, right?
Yeah, we call it the northernmost Hawaiian island. So
how are the beaches there? Is it beautiful?
Some of them are beautiful. Some of them are pretty rocky, but some of them are just amazing.
Cool. Right on. And you also have experience as an Elders Quorum president. Is that in Utah or is that in Alaska?
Yep. That's all my other church experiences in Utah.
Okay, cool. And then also a Sunday school president, right?
Yes. Best calling in the church other than
nursery. You just have to ring the bell, right?
Well, I like that calling because you can really help teachers teach the gospel better and get people to really feel the Spirit during gospel doctrine, Sunday school for youth. And, it's a lot of fun because you really can impact people, for real. And that's really exciting.
Yeah, no, I would agree. It's the most underrated calling in a ward. And I hope I really sincerely want the opportunity to be a Sunday school president or in the Sunday school presidency, because it is one of those callings that without really sitting down, reading the handbook and understanding your responsibilities, it can just casually turn into a bell ringer, right?
Yeah. And what's funny is that I've been Sunday school president a couple of times. Actually, time I get released from being Elders Quorum president, they call me to be that. And I never ring the bell. And my bishops have always been like, your job is to like ring the bell. And I'm like, I think people can read a clock and know when it's time to stop. So I don't worry too much about that.
You're excelling at every other part of the calling and they're just worried about the bell. Where is the bell? Right.
Exactly.
Cool. Now, did you serve a mission?
Yes, I did. I served in the Russia Novosibirsk mission, and that was an amazing experience. Yeah, wow. It is. I stumble over it still.
So is that Eastern Russia, Western Russia?
Siberia, actually. Oh, wow. So people joke that I must have done something really wrong to get sent to a prison area.
What's the highest temperature you experienced on your mission?
The highest was actually 110.
Oh, okay. So there's some parts. Is it a big mission or it's just sort of a stigma that it's always cold there?
It's a very big mission. It was about as big as the United States was.
Oh my goodness.
A little bit smaller. It was from Ulan-Ude to Omsk. If you look those two places up on a map, it's pretty huge.
Don't ask me where they are. I have no clue.
No.
So it's big, huh?
Yeah, very big, but it would get very, very cold in the winter, and then it'd be very hot and humid in the summer. So it's really about the extremes, and it would go from negative 40 to plus 40 Celsius, and that's about negative 40 Fahrenheit to about 105 Fahrenheit. So definitely extremes, and that was very intense to be sure.
Interesting. Wow, I learned something. Very cool. Now, what sort of phase of life are you in? Wife and a handful of kids at home? You said you had four kids. Are you still have four kids?
Yep, got four kids. They are 3, 5, 7, and 9. And my wife, of course. And I think it's a pretty good phase. They're right at my favorite age of kids right now. I'm sure in 5 years I'll say that's my favorite age. But they're curious about everything. They're excited about everything. They still love school. And so everything is awesome. And I get to take them out fishing. And my 7-year-old caught her first fish a couple weeks ago. And that's an amazing thing to experience. And just like the joy that comes from that is just awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to go fishing in Utah, which, has some pretty nice places. I'm not a big outdoorsman, fisherman, but I hear that's the case. But man, to take your kid fishing in Alaska, like what more do you want in life, right?
Yeah, she's catching fish that like she can't even lift up because they're so big and they're almost
that's
as
awesome.
Up to her waist just from the ground up. So it's pretty cool.
Cool. Now, my last Alaska question. Okay. I've heard rumor that the government pays you to live there. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. People got about $2,000 last year for living here.
Wow. And it's just a check in the mail that comes and then you go spend it?
Pretty much. So it's called the PFD, the Permanent Fund Dividend. And people get that for living here, but you have to have lived here for a full calendar year. We moved up here in July of last year, so this will be our first calendar year. So we will actually get our first PFD check in October of 2016. So it's not like you just come up here and the money starts coming in. It it takes time. You have to go through a process.
You have to invest.
You have to invest, and then you get it. But that'll be a nice thing. And hopefully our plan is, and you can ask me this in a year if we did it, is to keep, to save our kids' money and then spend our money on our kids so that they're saving it for college and whatever. And
oh, wow.
We can do some of the fun stuff.
So each individual gets $2,000.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Now with four kids, that gets to be definitely an exciting thing.
Yeah, sure.
Cause that's a lot of money. So
gotta have some more kids.
I know, right?
Well, and I can just imagine the discussions that break out in priesthood meeting as to whether you should pay tithing on your government stipend there. I'm just kidding. This culture, we're always looking for a gray area to debate. So anyway, so.
Yeah. I haven't heard any conversations about that yet. So,
okay, good. Well, yeah. Cool. Well, let's jump in a little bit to your, now that we know who you are, the great the podcast you create. Let's talk about your experience in leadership in the church. Now, let's go back when you were called as Elders Quorum president. Was that a calling that came out of left field? Were you in the Elders Quorum presidency before you were called? How did that calling come to reality?
You know, I don't really remember. I feel like I'm a very outgoing person. I share my opinion freely, and I'm also 100% committed to the church. And so I think because of those things, I've been in some form of leadership from the time that I was a deacon, being the deacon's quorum president. And I don't say that to like say I'm amazing or anything, but
well, you are, Jethro, let's be honest.
Thank you. Yeah, let's be honest. I just feel that, you know, the Lord needs people to do those callings that a lot of people are afraid to do. I'm not afraid to talk to new people. I'm not afraid to go to meetings and be dedicated. And so, you know, for my elders quorum positions, I feel like I've come into a ward and they've seen that I'm willing and that I want to serve. And so they've asked me, and I feel like most times the Lord has prepared me. One time, I was a counselor for 6 months first. Another time, I just moved into the ward, and it was, and I think I told the bishop that I was elders quorum president, and then, you know, 20 minutes later he called me or something like that. But, that's kind of, I just feel like the Lord has prepared me for each of my callings and in different ways and made sure that I was ready before I actually got the call. And the first time I was elders quorum president, I was in my first year of teaching. My wife had just had, a baby, and I was starting a master's program, and there was just so much going on. I didn't know how I would do anything. And I said, when I was asked, I said, I don't know that I can do this because I don't know that, that I'm going to have time to commit to this. And, my stake president, who I can't remember what he did for a job, but he was like incredibly busy. Also, he basically said, the Lord will help you find time and you'll do your calling and you'll do your best at it. And the Lord will make up the difference. And, that was, you know, that took a big leap of faith for me because I honestly didn't think that I'd be able to do anything because, I was so busy. I was working two jobs as well, and sometimes three jobs. So there was no time for me to do anything. And yet somehow I made all those things work. And I now believe that they all worked out because I was still faithful in my calling and serving the Lord. And when you do that, he blesses you in other areas of your life.
Cool. Now, what about, tell us maybe about the geography or demographics of your current ward in Alaska. How many stakes are in Kodiak?
Well, we have about 11,000 people on the island. And so we are a ward that is part of the Soldotna stake, and Soldotna is on the Kenai Peninsula. And so we are, 250 miles away from the next closest ward. And so we do a lot of things over internet, video conferencing, things like that. And
what are some examples of things you do over video?
So bishopric trainings, state conference is all broadcast. Any stake firesides are broadcast. So pretty much anything relating to the stake is broadcast over the internet for us to pick up. So, so the people that live here, we're just a ward, and we have, probably about 300 members, and then we get about 100 members per week in sacrament meeting. Though there's also a Coast Guard base here, and so the Coast Guard, they change every summer. They move people in and out, and so we had a large influx of Coast Guard families that came to the island that are members, and then the school district actually hired a few members that are now coming to our ward. So,
wow.
The Coast Guard supplies a lot of people, and then we have a few Filipino families that come here to, many Filipinos come here to work in the canneries. And so it's a fairly diverse place for being such a small island.
Yeah. Now, do they also, what about like temple recommends with the stake presidency? Do they do those remotely or?
The stake president tries to do them in person when he comes. But if he doesn't, then we do them over the church's conferencing app, which is video or something.
So the church has an official conferencing system. It's not like you just default to Skype or something.
Nope. They have that all taken care of. And, they've been aware of these limitations for a long time, and having to run a worldwide church and meet with people still, there's a great need for it. So a few years ago, they were using like Cisco telepresence, that kind of thing that has been popular in TV shows. And it's basically a big, huge TV that has a camera on it. And that's a very expensive approach. And so, they had those at church headquarters, and then people who needed to interview with church leadership would go to someplace that had that and connect. And then they started developing or contracting out to get these other things, like video, VIDYO, for the churches to have. So we have a church purchased laptop that the bishop has in his office that we use for all of these things. And then we join in those conferences whenever we need to. And it's pretty impressive. My mission president actually told me that is how they run all of their meetings at, in my mission currently. They didn't do this then, but now they do everything through that, online, video conferencing, which is amazing.
Yeah. You hear various, common technologies that the church is using, but it's cool to hear that they're using very expensive technology too, that really makes those types of interviews and meetings feel more real without flying people all over the world. So, wow, that's interesting. I'm glad you mentioned that. What else? I was going to ask you, so were you, when you were called as a member of the bishopric, was that done via that system, or did they come to you, or?
No, they came to me. So we were without a counselor in the bishopric for the first couple of months that I was here. And that was a time where they felt they needed to come and make sure they found the right person in person. So, they come down here for board conferences, and then, maybe a couple times a year, But that's all that we see the stake presidency in person. And then our high counselors do come out every month, but our high counselor this last time got weathered out, and so he couldn't come because the weather was too bad. So so those things happen.
And do they come by boat or?
It depends on their purpose for traveling. So one guy has grandkids that live here. So he comes down on the boat, stays for a couple of days, and then speaks in church and then goes back on the boat. But most everybody else just flies down because they don't have family down here.
Yeah. It's just a quick trip, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. Well, I guess I will stop complaining when I have to drive 15 minutes to my stake center that is completely on the other side of the stake. And man, I don't got time for that.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm glad to, I don't mean to dwell on that, but it's interesting just to, for my living in the Utah bubble and, you know, every corner has a church type situation to hear about that and to appreciate what I do have and makes it an adventure. So your ward is the only ward in your building, only ward on the island.
That's correct.
Okay. Wow. So you get 10 a.m. church every week?
Yes, we do.
Oh, man. That's you never awesome. Have to change?
Nope, never.
Oh, okay. The reasons to move to Alaska are just piling up for me. So yeah. I may just pop up in your ward. So be ready.
Come on up.
Cool. So, all right. Now you sent me prior, as I do with all these How I Lead interviews, you sent me a list of some leadership principles that you've maybe picked up, learned, applied during your time of service. And I think as we go through these, different stories will rise to the surface, whether that's from your time in the Sunday school presidency, the bishopric or elders quorum presidency. And let's just talk about them. So the first one you said was storylines. What on earth do you mean?
So the storylines, I think, is one of the most powerful things that we can do. And it's basically how we deal with misunderstandings. I'm sure that you've experienced a time where you've walked by your boss at work or your spouse at home or one of your kids and you got a look, right? And that look basically means whatever you make it mean. And so, for example, I walked by my bishop the other day. He was sitting in and talking to someone and he looked at me and just kind of like shook his head. And it would have been really easy for me to think that I was doing something wrong and that I was the one that he was shaking his head at. And what really happens is we make up something for that situation and create a storyline in our mind. And when we do that, sorry,
go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No problem. when we do that, we create these storylines that can really damage us. So if you're at work and your boss gives you a look, you think, oh my gosh, I'm in trouble. What am I going to do? And what did I do wrong? And that kind of stuff happens all the time. So the way that I deal with that is I tell people about the storylines and then I go up to them and I say, hey, I have a storyline in my head and I want to get to the truth. And it takes courage and it takes a listening heart on the part of the other person that you have a storyline towards. And when you say that, then if somebody says that to me, and this is how I use it at work, especially because there's a lot going on in a school and teachers are very passionate people. And so they can start interpreting things very differently. So people come and say, I have a storyline, and that is my cue as the person who's hearing that to remove all judgment, to be very focused on listening, and to try to figure out how I can communicate better with that person. So if somebody says, I have a storyline, and they tell me what it is, then I have the opportunity to tell them that is their storyline is either true or false. And like 99% of the time, their storyline is false. And so when they tell me that, then I can clear it up and say, no, what I meant when I shook my head at you was that I can't talk right now but I want to talk later. Or what I meant when I gave you that look was I was actually thinking about, you know, what I'm going to do for dinner tonight with my family. And I wasn't thinking about anything relating to what's going on with you. And when you have misunderstandings with people, it's easy for those to blow up, for people to misunderstand, and for people to get frustrated and hurt and be totally, totally wrong about what is going on. And it is really powerful when you can have an organization where you actually tell what your storylines are and you work through that, because all it does is build trust and help you grow closer to that person and know that that person probably thinks that you're pretty awesome.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, this is a concept they talk about in Crucial Conversations. Are you pulling this from that or is this something else?
You know, I learned it someplace else.
Oh, okay, cool.
I read Crucial Conversations, but it's basically the same premise in there.
Right. Because we as humans have this weird instinct, and I don't know if it's a protective instinct or where it comes from, but when we make, you know, our brain is always processing information around us. And like you said, you can walk by somebody that's an authoritative figure in your life and he looks at you and shakes his head. You think, oh my goodness, he's so disappointed in me, or man, what a jerk. Like, I didn't even do anything. And there he is shaking his head at me. Right. And so we're filling in all the gaps. It's kind of, you're saying, or creating that storyline in our head that my bishop hates me and I don't know why. I'm such a dedicated counselor and he hates me. Right. And then we turn into a victim. And, you know, that's maybe one of many results is we can become the victim of the situation. And then I'm sure you see it as a principle that water cooler talk starts to act as a catalyst to that story you've told yourself. And then everybody's just fed up with Principal Jones, right? Because he's thrown everybody under the bus and doesn't ever consider, but in reality, they're just creating stories in their head where if they would come to you and say, so this happened, what did you mean by that? And you just said, oh, I just had some bad salmon for lunch. And I just kind of had a weird look on my face, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the person who this happens to the most is the bishop or the principal or the superintendent or the CEO. The boss is the one who usually gets this. And so I use this with my faculty at school and with the students to say, this is how we deal with these issues. And I even have a little card on my door at work that if somebody brings me that card, then that is my cue to go into a non-defensive, very understanding, very calm, listening mode of action. And it really makes it so that they can just get off what's on their chest, because that stuff will eat you apart. And it's just awful. So the bishop sitting up on the stand, looking out at people during sacrament meeting, you know, he could give a sideways glance to somebody. And really, you know, when people say, I left the church because I was offended, they're probably offended because they don't really understand what's going on. They had a storyline and they just kept feeding it and feeding it instead of actually talking about it and getting it resolved.
Yeah. And another way I've seen this concept, like I always go back to this concept. And again, I learned it in the context of Crucial Conversations, which is by the same authors of the influencer book you mentioned. But I find it a lot where when you have maybe an auxiliary kind of drama breaks out between one leader and a teacher, or, you know, two instructors or whatever it is, and they come to you and say, here's the problem. You won't believe what brother so-and-so did or sister so-and-so did. They just marched right in here. They did A, B, and C, and I couldn't believe they would do such a thing. And so it's an opportunity for a leader to, whether they bring both parties in and act kind of as a mediator, or counsel with them individually and say, well, so what intention did you think they had by doing that, right? And they thought, well, because they hate me and they want this calling or whatever, right? And then you go to the next person, you say, well, this is a story this person's talking. How would you correct that? Like, what are they missing or not understanding? They'll say, oh, no, I was just, you know, that's just how I thought she wanted me to do it, or, you know, whatever it is. And then you can start getting everybody on the same page. And so it's important not only for a leader to understand this concept, but also between two parties when you're trying to resolve a dispute, that they can understand what their perspective is. And therefore, we can all be in reality and solve the problem rather than having these false perceptions of one another.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. And I think that most problems with people stem from somebody creating a storyline and not dealing with it in an appropriate manner and just feeding it and making it worse off. And what you just said really leads into the second leadership.
I was just going to say that, right? Empathy.
That's right.
You need a lot of empathy in order for this to work.
Absolutely. And what I believe is that whenever somebody is doing something, I have to think that they are doing the best they can and that they are not being evil or manipulative or whatever. So whenever somebody does something, whether I like it or not, I have to believe that they're doing the best that they can. And if I start there, it makes it a lot easier for me to help them improve and help them do better. When I don't start there and when I think, you know, that person is probably doing this because they're mad or because they're whatever, then I'm always, you know, erasing whatever goodwill could be there. And you've got to have that empathy and really believe that somebody's doing their best and that they're not intentionally doing something wrong, bad, or otherwise disruptive.
Yeah. Perfect. And I've experienced this a lot in my own experience when I've maybe had a counselor that just isn't understanding how, how I want them to fulfill certain assignments. And it can create the perception that, man, he just doesn't care. You know, I've asked him to do these things and he doesn't get them done. Like, we need to just release him. I mean, this is ridiculous. And then when you talk to him, you find out a whole new storyline of like, well, actually I'm swamped at work. I was just laid off. My wife and I are need more time together. And you're like, oh, okay. And then you kind of turn that empathy on and think, well, that's fine. We can work something out. Right. But so if you start with that empathy, like you said, it goes a long way.
It really does. And it's just amazing when people start to see that that's how you start acting, then it's so powerful because they really believe that that's what you're going to do. So then they let down their guard and they come to you and say, I really don't want to do this. I'm not very good at this. I'm going to struggle with this. I need some help. You know, they'll come and start asking for help when they know that you believe that they're doing their best. And that creates a very positive and inspiring relationship between you and that person.
Cool. And this may also lead into the third principle you have, which is ask questions. What do you mean by that?
So when you're working with someone, to prevent the storyline and to increase your own empathy, you really need to ask a lot of questions. And no matter what's going on, you've got to listen before you start giving your side of the story or whatever. And whenever there's a problem, we, as a bishopric, we really try to understand what people's issues are when they have issues. And when we're, you know, interviewing people or extending callings and someone's not comfortable with it, we really try to understand what is going on. And we do that by asking questions and letting them answer as best they can, and then asking more questions so that we really take the time to get to the real reason, because you can't solve any problems unless you actually have the real reason. And so just asking lots of questions and really trying to understand. And you know what? This takes a lot of time. And that's the worst part about it is, in my day job as a principal, I need to ask those questions because I need to understand things. But I also am very being pulled in a lot of directions, and asking questions is sometimes really difficult for me to do. But every time I do it, it's worth whatever time I put into it, because then we actually solve problems instead of just moving them around or delaying them or something like that.
Perfect. Awesome. Yeah. And I know with asking questions, it's going to feed into better inspiration as well. You know, when you're in a ward council, it's easy for the leader to act authoritatively and give the marching orders. But the more questions a leader asks, the more ideas come to the table and better inspirations received as well. So I love that point.
And that's a really good point too, because in those meetings, everybody's just going to, you know, if the bishop says this is what we need to do, everybody's just going to say, yeah, well, let's just do it. Right. And people get really frustrated when there's a plan already in place and you're pretending to listen, but really you're just going to do the plan that you had in your mind the whole time. People can sense that and they know that that's happening. And what we really need to be focusing on is, let's work together to find the best plan. And if I have an idea, then I should be the one saying it, whether I'm the bishop or a president of some other auxiliary. But if you're asking questions in ward council, then you're not really saying this is what we have to do. You're saying, let's find our best options. And then I will be the bishop and I will make a decision and I will say, this is what we're going to do. But if we ask questions first, then we can figure out what our strengths are, what the needs are, and be more informed when we do make that final decision.
Perfect. All right. Your fourth principle, you say, Jethro, is let your testimony shine through no matter what you are doing.
This one is definitely a leadership principle for me outside of church, and it works in church also, but I work in a public school. It's not appropriate for me to proselyte to my staff, to my students. But it is appropriate for me to let my testimony shine through. And it is appropriate for me to, teach gospel principles to those people in a way that, that is not proselyting. So for example, I know that we are all children of our Heavenly Father. And so when a really rotten kid comes in and everybody sees him as this horrible, bad kid, I know that he is still a son of God. And I treat him that way as best I can. And I know that when I do that, the kids feel that they are important to me, and they really are, because they're my brothers and sisters. And I may not recognize that fully in my mortal body, but I know spiritually that they are just as important as I am in the eyes of our Father. And I really just believe that so strongly, that I need to treat them as children of God. And when I do treat them as children of God, then I feel like I get that same treatment in return. And when I don't treat them as children of God and I treat them like little kids, little naughty kids especially, then they don't return, they return those same feelings to me, and it's not helpful. So I let them know that their value is huge, that their importance is real, that they're not just some little punk kid like everybody else sees them. They really are somebody important, and they have limitless potential, and they can do anything that they want to do, and they can be whoever they want to be. And so that's how I let my testimony shine through. And when I'm doing that with kids, I'm really just letting them know that they have the potential to be something much more than they currently are and do better than how they're currently doing.
Awesome. Great principle for sure. Now the fifth principle is three words you wrote down: tell me more. So Jethro, tell me more about tell me more.
So that is essentially my little catchphrase when I'm talking to somebody. when there's an awkward pause or they say that they're, you know, that they're done telling something, then I use that to say, you know, I know there's more to it, so just tell me more. So, you know, a teacher comes in and has an issue with something, and I just say, tell me more about that. And that doesn't give any judgment or any like, what do you want me to tell you? It's just tell me more. And it's very effective at making people tell the things that they're really thinking about, and not just what they think you want to hear. And it's a good way to continue. It's, you know, it's tied into asking questions, obviously, but it's different because you're letting them just go on and keep talking. And when they go on and keep talking, then they reveal what their intentions are. And what most people don't like silent pauses. And so I say, tell me more. And then I just wait and let them, you know, feel uncomfortable for a minute. And then they start talking more about what's going on. And so that helps with storylines also, that, that helps them really explain what's going on and be honest about it.
That is awesome. Really powerful principle there. I know, you know, I run my own business, but in reality, I'm just a glorified salesman of my business. And so I've taken various sales training courses, and that's a powerful thing to do when you're in sales, right? Because you're meeting with a prospect, and you don't want to tell them or give them too much information that they don't even want in the first place. And so the big thing to do is always say, you know, well, tell me more about that. Or when they ask you a question, you kind of turn around and say, well, what do you mean by that? Tell me more about, you know, such and such. And really powerful leadership principle, absolutely, to get people talking. And it's amazing the additional information that rises to the surface when you use that phrase. So I think that's fantastic. Cool. Now, let's get more into the tactics of your day-to-day, week-to-week leadership experience. And, you know, if you want to touch on Sunday school stuff here, Elders Quorum, that's fine as well. But currently, as a bishopric member, I'm interested, especially when you're in such a unique, uniquely geographic experience in Alaska, when you're literally on an island, just how your meetings are structured in your day-to-day. So starting from Monday morning and going to Saturday night, what's your typical week like as far as meeting structure and things you do?
My bishop is probably going to kill me if he listens to this.
Oh boy.
So, my bishop has been the bishop for the last 5 years. He's got a system that works for him, and he's a real action person. And if something needs to be done, he's just going to take care of it. And so we don't typically have bishopric meetings during the week, especially in the summer, because when it gets dark at 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night, having a meeting at 8 o'clock is really just interrupting your fishing. And so we typically
Alaska props.
That's right. We typically don't have bishopric meetings during the week, and especially in the summer. And then if things need to be done, then he's the kind of guy who's just going to do it. He's very selfless. He's very focused on serving others, and he doesn't want to inconvenience others. And I think he probably carries more of a burden than he needs to, which is saying a lot, because bishops carry a big burden already. But he's just been doing this for a long time. He knows who everybody is. He knows their history. He knows their problems. And, you know, he doesn't have to deal with, he doesn't have to involve everybody in every decision. And, you know, that works fine for me. And he's a great bishop and really cares. One of the principles that he's taught me is that you just need to forgive people right away. And that's how you deal with being a leader in the church is you just forgive people all the time. And you forgive them in your heart, whether or not they're asking for forgiveness. And especially when they are asking for forgiveness and confessing things, you just forgive them. And that's been really powerful. So we don't typically have meetings. However, we do have a fair amount of church activities. So we're having a luau tomorrow it's Saturday. So we're having it today and we're going to roast a couple of pigs and they're at the church doing that right now. I know. Cool. So some benefits of living on the
northernmost. One more reason to move to Alaska. This is great.
So we don't do much in the wintertime when it gets dark around 4 or 5 o'clock. Oof. Then we do have meetings during that time. And then we just work really hard to get everything taken care of that we need to when we need to get things done, and then just do it when it needs to be done.
Cool. Right on. And any cool technology tricks or ways you use technology in your calling?
So for my scripture study, I use the LDS Gospel Library app. And what is really good about that is that there are these little notebooks, and I create a notebook for each topic that I'm studying. And so the latest one that I've been doing was being led by the Spirit. So I have a notebook, and whenever I highlight something in the Gospel Library app, then I tap the share button, and then it gives me an option to share it to a notebook, and I share it to the notebook that is connected to that topic. And what that does for me is that makes it so that I have a topical list of scripture references, basically, that tie into a specific thing. So this last week, we were out fishing Saturday night about 10 o'clock, and I was with the bishop, and he got a call from from the high councilman who was supposed to come and speak the next day. And he said that he couldn't land in Kodiak because there was fog, and, you know, we were out in it, so we could see the airport and we could see that nobody was probably landing. It was good fishing, but not good flying. So he said he wasn't going to make it. And so then the bishop said, it's my month to conduct. So he said, our high counselor is not coming. And I said, so I guess I'm giving a talk, huh? And he said, yep, you are. You got one. And thankfully I did have one because I've been studying my scriptures that way. And so I had to do was, you know, go home and open up the Gospel Library app and, you know, go through that topic of being led by the Spirit and move things around, add a couple comments in where I wanted to be sure I said something. And then I was able to give a talk that was coherent and mostly planned out before. I did the work while I was studying so that when the time came, I could get up and give it. And that's something that, you know, not every person in the church needs to be able to do, but there's a lot of value in studying the gospel by topic. And I think that's the best way to do it. Instead of just reading through the scriptures, you study by topic. And when you do that, then you get a lot of information, way more than you could use in a talk. And so you can just skip over things as you're speaking and not have to touch on everything. So that's one way that I use technology.
Cool. You know, that happened to me 3 times just last week. I had to go to a meeting, but it was too foggy for me to land my plane. So I just couldn't go. You know? It's so funny to hear that those things because it's so unique to Alaska, like being a member in Alaska on an island. It's like, yeah, it's too foggy. I can't land my plane. So therefore, I can't speak in church on Sunday. So that's awesome.
Pretty awesome.
Cool. Now, what about going back to your time as Elders Quorum president, any tips or tricks when it comes to home teaching?
You know, we did a couple of different things. My co-host on the Learned in Primary podcast is Tom Bay, and he's someone you should have on. He is a fantastic church leader and is just amazing and inspiring. And he and I were in the Elders Quorum presidency together. And he was the secretary of the Elders Quorum presidency. And he and I realized that If we committed people to doing their home teaching for a solid year with real intent, then they would be lifelong home teachers, because the way you get a testimony of home teaching is you actually go out and do it. And so we really tried to drive that message home and did, PPIs and talked to people and tried to help and support them to do that. And, you know, honestly, I don't know how successful we were, because I moved out of that ward shortly after that. But I hope that we were successful. And that really is I think what you need to do is get a testimony of it by actually doing it and really like praying about your families, thinking about your families, and then actually going out of your way to serve them. And then I think that I read this on the Mormon Life Hacker blog, which I think you're associated with that blog also, aren't you?
Tevye is my business partner by day. And then that's his pet project is Mormon Life Hacker, and mine's Leading LDS. So, yes.
Okay. All right. I knew you were associated to that in some way. Uh-huh. So I think I read on there that you don't ask, is there anything I can do for you? Because the answer is always no.
I wrote
no.
that. Yes.
Okay. All right. So tell me more about that question.
I hate that question, especially as a bishop, when people come up to me and say, Bishop, is there anything I can do for you? And I'm just like, I don't know. Look around, find something, go straight in the chairs. Like, is it my job to find something for you to do? And I know I'm being very, negative in that approach. But really, like, the best thing to do is like, look at their situation and think, if I was in their situation, what would just be so nice to have happen next, right? And maybe you tell them that you're going to babysit their children one night, so them and their wife, they and their wife can go out and have a date night, or you know, just show up and mow their lawn one morning, and that's going to go a long way, right? But we just let ourselves off the hook when we say, "Is there anything we can do for you?" Nope, perfect, check, moving on. You know, so. Sorry.
Yeah.
You struck a chord with me, obviously.
Okay. That's great. And I'm grateful that I'm finally able to talk to the man who inspired me to stop asking that question. And I've always hated that every time I did it, but it was one of those cultural things where I thought that's what you're supposed to do.
You just don't know what else to say. So it's like, well, anything I can do for you? Great. Moving on.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, I appreciate you writing that so long ago, and that's inspired me for a long time. And then also in our podcast, we talked about in the first episode, we were reading a book called Built to Lead, which is about how to recognize your employees so that they want to do better things. And obviously we took a gospel approach to that. How do you recognize the people in the ward? And one of the things that they suggested was doing a book club with your employees. And so as we were talking, Tom suggested, you know, what if you had a scripture club? And as the home teacher, when you went to somebody's house for home teaching, you really talked to them about their scripture study, and you're genuinely focused and interested on your family's scripture study. And if you could find a way to help your home teaching families do better at studying the scriptures, then you would go a long way to helping them grow closer to the Savior, because that's what the scriptures are about, is the Savior. And it would be really amazing to see a family grow closer to the Lord because of what you're doing as helping them grow closer through reading his scriptures. And that was something that I hadn't thought of, and something that I'm starting to try with the families that I home teach now. And I'm interested to see how it goes. So
cool. We'll That's see. A great idea. I love that. It brings structure to the visit, right? I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
They know what you're going to talk about, and they can even encourage them to prepare beforehand. So that's a great idea.
It was Tom's. My great ideas are Tom's. Right. So
we'll get him on here and shower him with praise. So, I'd be interested in interviewing him. So that'd be great. Well, with that, let's wrap this interview up with the question I always ask at the end of how I lead is, as you have served as a Sunday school president, elders quorum president, bishop break counselor, and I'm sure you have many formal and informal leadership callings ahead of you, how has serving as a leader made you a better disciple of Jesus Christ?
I think most simply it has made me love other people, and I haven't always had that approach. The leadership principles that I talked about today, I haven't always felt that way, and I've gone through many leadership phases. But when I'm focused on understanding people, loving them, and treating them as children of our Father in heaven, it really makes it easier to do whatever it is I need to do. And you just need to love people. And being a leader, being a member of the church, has taught me to love others. And that has been the biggest thing for me, is now that I love others, I understand why our Savior wants us all to return back to Him. Because when you love someone, you really want them to have what's best. And living with the Savior is the best.
Wow, what a fun interview. It was just so intriguing to learn about how the church runs in Alaska. And I'm naive to anything outside of Utah. And I love hearing the different dynamics and problems, like your high councilman cannot speak in sacrament meeting because he cannot land the plane in fog. I mean, fantastic, interesting. And I pray for the saints up there in Alaska and everywhere in the world that have to deal with unique circumstances. And I will remember those individuals as I drive 15 minutes to my stake center for my responsibility. So fantastic to learn about that. Jethro's a fantastic leader. I hope I find an opportunity in the future to have him on again. And make sure you go check out his podcast. Whether you're a principal or not, I'm sure there's a lot of leadership to take away from his transformative principle podcast. But yeah, if you are in the public school, private school arena, check those out. I'm sure they're fantastic, and I look forward to looking into it. And then Learned in Primary, the podcast there, which is more LDS focused. So the more we understand the positive LDS podcasts out there and support them, we're going to have an impact online, and we're going to fill that space that needs to be filled with good, positive information about not only leadership in the church, but membership in the church. So as always, I appreciate you listening to Leading LDS. Join the Leading LDS Helpers group on Facebook, and we discuss a lot of things behind the scenes as far as upcoming interviews and ideas, and it's great to associate more closely there. And as always, join Leading LDS. You can be part of the newsletter, the community there. Put in your email address, and you'll get consistent communication and upcoming episodes and all those things right to your inbox. So as always, the more I can do this, the more I can support and feed my family and fill up and be able to open up time to focus on leading LDS, the better. And so on the side, I just casually mentioned Fiddler Studios. It's my day job. I help small businesses build great websites. So if you are a small business and you need some help there, I put on workshops in Salt Lake City that are free. I would love to have you join me there. Or if you do need help with a website, reach out to me. Again, the more I succeed there, the more I can succeed in leading LDS. And so Fiddler Studios is our unofficial sponsor of the Leading LDS podcast. Until next time, be a leader and not a calling.